Just a heads up, I can see that you've got this whole show scripted out, so
no, we don't.
You might want to get back on point.
I am a radio icon.
Let me
see. And by the way, so are you.
Hi, I'm Max, and hi, I'm Mike. Here's the Oddcast.
You are a pussy.
Everybody's dodging us.
Everybody's dodging us. Why is that?
There's no reason to talk to us.
Because most of what you say is gibberish, that's why.
Ladies and gentlemen, Max Tolkoff.
Are we rolling?
So here's what I think we should do this week, because frankly, I'm exhausted. I can't do it with you, right?
I don't understand. What do you mean, exhausted?
You exhaust me. Dealing with you is an effort. It's like exercise. So you have this great interview you did with Robert Plant explaining the whole Jamaica thing, right?
Isn't
that what you want to talk about?
Yeah.
So how many people have heard that interview?
I don't know, but how many times do you want to pop the peas? By the way, I need to thank. Here, let me give you this thing here. Let me do this. We're in a professional studio.
I told you that, you know, I had a problem with peas, but you're like, no, this is fine. Talk down the barrel. It's going to be great.
That's a different mic. I want to thank my buddy Bill Corkery. We're going to actually do an interview with him because he's one of the most intelligent people on the planet, and he has his own recording studio. And
that's the only reason you're telling me he's intelligent.
Can you shut up for 1 second?
We're in a studio. As soon as we leave, you're going to go, what a fucking asshole.
I'll wait about a week.
All right, good.
The point is that we're borrowing Bill's studio,
right,
but we're introducing the fact that I interviewed Robert Plant when I was at FM 94.9, which is now called Alt 94.9 here in San Diego. Robert Plant came by and sat with me for about an hour, I think it was. You'll find out in the interview, and he hung out.
Are we ever going to get to the interview?
We are, but we discussed the fact that I hated, years ago, all the jocks of the 70s that would say, okay, everybody, that's right when House of the Holy came out. Everybody, that's Dire Maker.
I did that on the air for 20 years.
You played Dire Maker on the air?
Yes.
I used to call DJs in Detroit and yell at them and say, look, it's a joke. D'YER is J. Like, did you? J.
But here's the thing.
Maker.
We're running this. You know why? Because nobody believes you, right? But we have the proof. We're going to run the interview.
It's on Wikipedia.
I understand. And the reason we're doing this, okay, is because the people in our circle, which are all program directors, music directors of radio stations, radio listens
to
this,
right,
they need to know
They play the Stone Temple Pilots version and still mispronounce it.
See?
So let me
thank
Bill Corkery. This is from 4,259 million years ago. This is me talking to Robert Plant, who came in the studio when I was at FM 94.9, and this is that Oddcast.
All right, roll it.
The radio station's FM 94.9, and please welcome to the studio Mr. Robert Plant. Thank you so much. You can get as close to that mic as you want.
I'm in here. Nice effect.
First of all, it's very true. You like that? I can get rid of that.
No, I like it. No, I'd want it back. Give me that. Yeah, okay. I want to be Elvis.
We have a slight delay thing because of the electronic processing.
Yeah.
First of all, thanks for coming in. I know cool. You really don't do these things as much as
I used to. I mean, many years ago, we used to, in the late 60s, that was what we did.
Right.
All over the country. I remember going to loads of radio stations with Paige, and we'd just play and sometimes take our own stuff in, Skip James stuff or,
right,
you know, some obscure bits and pieces.
I got to ask you, there's so many bands that I see nowadays that go like, you know, how come Zeppelin was so huge and blah, blah, blah. And the one thing I noticed, if you go to one of the old web pages where they give your gig guide, your gigography,
mm-hmm,
you guys played 9-10 months out of every year from almost the time you formed until 74, 75.
Yeah, it's like that.
I don't know how you guys could have, number one, written such amazing songs, recorded all of them, toured, and not killed each other in you know. And I'm sure there was times where you were pretty close to it, but.
Well, you know, as ethically, I mean, first of all, we didn't really know each other to begin with, had no idea of what we were dealing with. I knew Bonzo really well.
That's because you two were from the Midlands, and the other guys were basically session guys, right?
Well, they'd both been in bands, but of course, I mean, sessions were what they did. I think Pagey would come back from a Yardbirds tour and go and do some stuff with,
mm-hmm,
whoever it was, you know, Joe Cocker, Lulu, the Stones, you know, Petula Clark, whatever it might have been. Same for Jonesy. He did a lot of arrangements for Donovan, Sunshine, Superman, and all that sort of thing. But he I don't think he played quite so much live. But Pagey was part of that whole sort of legend of the Yardbirds and, you know, the great guitarists, the British blue-eyed blues players. But and Bonzo and I were terrors. We were coming from an industrial town halfway up the country. We didn't know what to do with cutlery. We had no idea about any. There's no ethic at all to what we would. We would. I mean, I was 19 when I met Jimmy, and Bonzo's about 3 or 4 months older than me. And we just went. And as we went along, we got to know each other more. There were the boundaries and the kind of possibilities were expanding all the time musically. And because we knew that we really could make things work musically, then our sort of emotional preferences or what I might have enjoyed as a night out where I come from, I put that on one side and just worked on the kind of the animal that was. It's the same as what I'm doing now, really, you know. We all come from different places. But
so even at that point, London to you was really just a foreign country because coming from the Midlands, it was just down the pub back home.
Well, yeah, I mean, we had our own culture, but, I mean, it was nowhere near as sort of continental. And we were just sort of, it's a bit like coming from Akron, I suppose. But tell the Black Keys that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, so I suppose, really, we just, as time went on, we got to know each other more and more. And the same thing's happened here now with this band. Now I've become like some kind of cornerstone of some kind of area of music, and the guys that I'm with have given me the life now that gets me in this room, because, you know, it's a chemical thing again. It's not, you know, we talk about misuse of chemicals,
right?
But this seemed to work amazingly well in 1968, and it's just really happening all over again in a different theater, in a different time. You know, it's very stimulating for me right now.
If I could read a couple of lyrics from Tin Pan Valley, which is one of the songs we've been, you know, I want to say powering, but we've been playing it, because to me, I heard the song, this is great, read the lyrics, which I normally don't do for 3 or 4 weeks because I like try to let the music wash over me first.
Mm-hmm.
Your lyrics are, I come from Tin Pan Valley and I'm moving right along. I live on former glory so long ago and gone. I'm turning down the talk shows, the humor and the couch. I'm moving up to higher ground. I found a new way out. Has this been a struggle for you ever since, you know, the demise of Zeppelin, that basically you knew that Zeppelin was a progressive band? You didn't just play quote-unquote metal or heavy metal or whatever it was.
No.
You were a folk band. You played reggae. You played blues. You played whatever the hell you wanted to.
Kashmir was written on the road between Guillaumin and Tantan on the Atlantic coast of southern Morocco. Not far
did you go,
from.
Did you go to the camel market in Guillaumin?
Indeed, yeah. In fact, Paige and I.
I've actually been there. That's the scary part, yeah.
And did you stay in the Salam Hotel?
No, we stayed in Agadir, but.
Okay. We used to stay in the Salam right next to the camel market, so that in the morning we'd wake up and I had an old cassette player and we'd put on the incredible string bands, Hangman's Beautiful Daughter, which is about as sort of Celtic and as wispy and otherworldly as you can imagine, to the sound of spitting camels. One morning we woke up there and I looked at Paige and we looked at each other and we said, we've got to get out of this place now. We're going crazy here. So we drove over 2 or 3 days right to the northern tip of Morocco and took a boat across to Spain. Went from Algeciras to Torremolinos along the southern coast, and we stood in a discotheque with flashing lights with a pint of warm English beer. Both of us standing in the middle of these chicks, scantily clad, fat English chicks, with this beer going, we did it, we got away, we escaped from Guillaumin, you know.
Right.
Great adventures, fantastic adventures. And now, again, bringing it back round again, I've been with Justin and Skin to beyond Timbuktu. I've been through Western Mali. I've followed the Niger River. I've seen the hippopotami coming up by the side of the boat early in the morning, as somebody's making a fire on the boat, actually on the metal of the boat.
When you were growing up in the Midlands, did you know that there was something out there beyond the black country, if you will?
Oh,
you
know? Of course. I could hear it.
Where was your pipeline? Was it just the blues? Was it, you know, listening to the BBC, or how did you do that? And then when you finally got to these countries?
The pipeline was, I was educated in a town which, was fortunately enough, had a great hip bohemian scene. So there was an art college, there was a jazz club, there was folk, there was people standing up and singing unaccompanied lead belly songs. So when I was 14, I was in love with beautiful raven-haired beatnik girls who did these amazing sort of beatnik stomp dances in circuit, like, almost like country dancing goes to Esquire. And I heard all the Ferlinghetti and the Cummings and the Kerouac, and I knew that there were people going from this town in the black country, which is like, you know, not what you expect. And they were going...
Pittsburgh.
And they were going... they were going to Afghanistan. They were going on the hippie trail through Turkey, across Central Europe, which is not particularly of any interest. But as soon as you start crossing, you know, the Caspian Sea, or going across through Turkey, and you can't do it now, through Afghanistan. My friends, who were my friends at the same time as me being... I was opening the show for the Trogs, who had Wild Thing in the charts that Hendrix played. And I was opening the show for them for £8 a night. And my mates were in Kabul and sleeping in caves on the road to Pakistan. And what the stories that they brought back and the music. Then I met a girl who was raised in, born in India, and we got married. And all the kind of the surroundings and the family and the exoticism, which was really just their everyday life compared to the greyness of English culture, was just coming in through my pores. It was fantastic.
So you knew at 14 there was a way out.
Oh, yeah.
And when you finally got there, how was it?
Well, I've got there. I've got the several theirs. I mean, I've reached.
But the first time when you actually experienced the North African or, you know, Afghanistan or, you know, any of those places, when was the first time you actually got there? Was it obviously after you joined Zeppelin?
No, it was just walking down the little passageway next to, you know, my kid's mother's house. It was just down that little alley in the dark. Next door was playing this Bengali music. And I could hear, I didn't know about scales, really. I was a rock and roll stroke rhythm and blues lunatic. But I just kept on getting attracted more and more to the sound of this blue note that keeps appearing all the time. And so that was the kind of Bengali East Indian sound and the kind of movement of the violins and stuff that we tried to create in Kashmir and I tried to use in Calling to You on Fate of Nations, that sort of idea of swirling strings. And now you hear it so much in dance music.
Right.
The sort of Bhangra mixed with the Pete Tong approach, you know, Asian Dub Foundation,
right.
Afro Celt, Trans Global Underground, that whole movement over there, which has been going for ages now.
You're completely blowing my mind, because most of you are, and I hate to use the word contemporaries, because...
They're not my contemporaries.
They're not your contemporaries.
Yeah, I have nothing to do with them.
I just realized
I disown them.
You are really, and that's the line in here.
Yeah.
The line in here, it says they're doing cabaret. What is it here? My peers may flirt with cabaret, some fake the rebel yell. I'm moving up to higher ground and must escape their hell. Because obviously
Their hell.
You basically have never stopped. And there's no way you could ever stop.
You know, the thing about it is that somehow or another, every dog almost has his day. Or almost every dog has a day. And I mean, with Zeppelin, we had carte blanche because there were no rules. Radio was much more liberal. And it seemed quite appropriate to play Achilles' Last Stand next to Ravi Shankar. But now it's over. I'm an older bloke. The usual radio program planners and stuff like that, who are controlled by major corporations attached to the president, they play bullshit music, usually controlled by... sponsorship, by watching listening figures and seeing how it works between Green Day and some, you know, Petula Clark,
right.
Whatever it is. But the thing is, we know how it works, and what it does is, apart from independent labels and small bands who make it through, it's throttled the music. And in Zepp, we were able to do more or less anything, because the criteria wasn't about becoming successful by repetition or by... sucking up to anybody and, you know, some kind of fake orgasm, you know, of musical success. It was about actually pushing the barriers out a bit more. And I've always thought that since John passed away, that I couldn't find any other reason to sing other than to do what I wanted to do, which was exactly that. Sometimes I've been successful. I've managed to keep an audience, and it's sort of dipped and swirled and become whatever it's become. And now it's coming out and it's all smelling of roses again.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole thing where we play, where the whole kind of idiom of the night is about the movement of the body against the music that we play. It's as North African in its rhythms as it is black flag in its power, you know. It's really, you know, it's a good place for me to be. I don't know whether or not I can be any more confident and rounded as I am now. I think this is a particularly high spot for me.
Well, the album's one of the reasons we recommended the album this month is when we got it in, we were kind of like, oh, cool, let's check this out. And right off the bat, there was something completely different about it compared to everything else that was out there on the streets now.
Well, I don't know about that. All I can say is that every single note and breath is intended here. There's not one attempt to sachet or nuance or romance anything. This is it.
It's real.
It's absolutely, it's everybody doing what they do.
Tell me about the guys on the record. You've got, as you said, Skin, who's played in San Diego before when he was in the band Cast.
That's right.
He came here before. Mm-hmm. You've got...
Justin Adams plays guitar too. He's a guy who's got our sort of passport to the desert. He's played here with Sinead O'Connor. Johnny Baggett, keyboards, and Clive Deamer, drums. I think they've been here with Portishead.
Portishead, one of our favorite bands.
Yeah.
Are you living close to Bristol now? Because it seems to me you've got the Massive Attack, the Portishead.
But everybody else does, except for me and Skin. Skin lives on the top of the mountains, and I live halfway down. and we're about 3 or 4 hours from them. But I mean, even the mixing and the remixes, Steve Evans helped us to do the album, and he mixed the stuff.
He did that at Gabriel Studio, was it? Real World?
No. We used a sort of one just down the road, which is just a teeny-weeny room. It ain't much bigger than this, you know. But it's great. With a couple of laptops and some microphones, compressors and stuff like that. I mean, it's so inspiring because I wouldn't have sung like this if I didn't have this to sing. If you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. You want to play the track Somebody's Knocking, and then we can continue? Tell me about this song. Because you don't have all the lyrics, as you probably know. You don't have all the lyrics in the thing.
I just heard that when Dylan was looking for clues, a bit like you were just playing the John Hammond thing, where there's references all the time to the poetry of the Delta. Well, when Dylan created that song, and he called it High Water Everywhere, you know, I think he was tipping his hat to the Delta and to not Tommy Johnson but Charlie Patton, and he was using all those terms. I in Mighty Rearranger I said, you know, if your mind is wandering, send it out like the wild geese in the west. It's all this great Delta poetry which is so pretty, and this was the first adventure that I had on this album. It's the first night that I actually got something out of it, and I sang against a little stereo backing track, and this was it.
It's FM 94.9, Robert Plant in the studio. Somebody's Knocking from Robert Plant. It's FM 94.9. He's in the studio with me, which is quite a thrill and an honor. We were just talking off the air. That's the song called Somebody's Knocking, by the way. We were just talking off the air about Rosie from Rosie and the Originals, which was it 56, 57? When did that?
1960. 60? Angel Baby.
Angel Baby came out?
It's just like heaven being here with you. I've sung that a million times in the back of my beaten up Pontiac.
Beaten up Pontiac? you drive a Pontiac around England? That's very scary.
I bought a Riviera boat tail, a 72, in Muskogee, Oklahoma. I loved it. It was powder blue with a cream rag top and 8 tracks. I got some very good Captain Beefheart 8 tracks. And I did 8 miles in 4 years.
That's it?
Yeah, I couldn't do any more because every time you go around a corner with the steering wheel on the wrong side, there's a tractor coming straight at you. It's just...
You have to move back to the city.
Yeah, I was there through the 70s, but I don't need that.
Yeah. I have like a million and a half questions for you, but you know, one thing that always sticks with me is the fact that because you haven't stagnated, do you find that when you run into any of your, I won't use the contemporaries, but the guys who were in that era too, can you relate to them anymore when you talk to them? Because you've already dropped the Black Keys, you dropped...
Well, it's not dropping them. The thing is, I want to be transmuted. I want to be transferred to energy and creativity. And, I mean, that exists in everyone, really. It just depends on how much you can apply yourself at a certain point in your life. Priorities change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, what little I know of Dave Gilmour, for example, from Floyd, and I don't know him very well, but I know he's a good guy, but he's kind of made his choice now of what he does and doesn't want to do. And, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, I'm in my mid-50s, is this, you know, the clock's ticking, is this what it is? Well, this is a lot of what it is, because, you know, when you can do something good in the beginning, why should you end up tailing up being a cabaret artist? I just don't understand where it runs out. You know, why should it just be a case of, it's a very simplistic thing. If you hang on to what everybody else knows, you just become part of the memory babe. And there's no,
right.
And that means that the artist is reduced more and more, because the creativity that happened in the beginning is why everybody loves it. So where should the time come where creativity is stifled and repetition is the order of the day? I don't get it. I can't see any point in doing that.
Well, I agree with you, and that's why we're all, you know, stoked and amazed that, you know, this record is as genius as it is. But at the same time, all the Black Keys, White Stripes, all of these bands that have basically harkened, they've all grabbed, in essence, some of the stuff that you did in the early, or I should say late 60s, and they're basically pulling it forward because...
Well, both those groups that you talk about, or both those duets,
yeah,
have leaned in the most recent times on... I mean, the Black Keys, they've got a Skip James melody on the most recent album, which is Hard Times, you know, which keeps turning up everywhere these days. But they've done it in a different way, a bit like Pagey and I did with Nobody's Fault But Mine.
Right.
Same with the Black Keys, with the White Stripes. It's just like that music was so powerful and so effective, coming from a lifestyle and a consciousness, the likes of which, even if you think that B.B. King is great and all that, we have no idea of where the root of that music came from. I mean, in theory and in reality, it came from West Africa. I know that because I've been there.
Right.
But in what happened in the Delta at that time in Mississippi, where there was no law, or if it was law, it was black law based on black priorities and premise, those songs and the kind of performances and the lyric that came out, I mean, that's why Somebody's Knocking's important to me, because it was using all those lyrics. It was trying to bring them all in into one song unashamedly, because it's like 19th century hip talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of street talk from the Delta, from you know, what you'd call 1890. Some of the terms that they use, I mean, I read books about like Robert Johnson's terminology and all that sort of stuff. It's a bit anal. It's either that or fishing. But and I can't stand fishing. But I've watched Paint Dry. That's a good one.
Yeah, there you go. Mojo Nixon, one of our local celebrities here in town, weird folky type artist. I don't know if you ever heard of Mojo before. Mm-hmm. But Mojo came in here the other day and he was spinning records on the air. And he basically said how when he discovered you guys, then he went back to the Yardbirds, and he went back to Robert Johnson, and he went back to, as far as he could, till he got to Chain Gangs.
Mm.
And he said that basically it was gospel music to him. This is the way to turn it. Gospel music sung by guys who had done the wrong thing and been thrown in jail. So it was like the devil and the gospel music got slammed together, and that's where rock and roll, in essence, or the blues, were, you know, the came out of. In other words, the devil got involved somewhere.
Yeah.
We don't know where, but somehow gospel music got mutated into, you know, what we all know now is love is, you know.
Well,
sex,
I think
drugs,
gospel music, you know, if you listen to the Swan Silvertones or, you know, so many of those groups that came through with Sam Cooke, you know, with the all that stuff that was coming out there goes in one particular direction. But I think that you've got to talk about before gospel, before there was a church, before, you know, you got to talk about people coming off the boats from Africa, having been, you know, stolen and dealt with in Africa by African tribes and Arab traders to the English and the Dutch and whoever else. And then they get off the boat. And they got their own story. That's what the Rolling Stones all about. That's what the Gree Gree is, and the Hoochie Coochie Man, and the, you know, all that stuff is. That's got nothing to do with the church. Amen. Who's a Hoochie Coochie Man? I don't see him wearing a robe on a Sunday.
Yeah, I don't either. The guys like James Lavelle, Uncle, those kind of guys. How have you kept up on? I mean, because you've only got X amount of hours in a day, and so do I, but keep up with all the music that you've kept up with, to hang out with guys like him, the guys you're playing with right now. What do? Stay up all day and read or listen to music 24 hours a day? I mean, I know you're Robert Plant, but I mean,
No, we need each other in this band. That's what it is. We're just very, very lucky that we actually, and we're totally different people. And I mean, I'm not the same age, so I have different preoccupations altogether. I'm trying to retain some of my youth one way or another or reinvent it. I've got different things going on to the other guys. But we do all meet mm-hmm. at various points in our consciousness to make it really good. So, I mean, yeah, that's just, we're just very lucky. Because I'm a good front man and these guys make so much of a weave. And if they didn't do that, I couldn't be here talking about it now. I may have done another Honey Drippers album, you know, instead.
Right. Let me ask you this. Do you find your kids help you out too? Because I know you've got kids that, like, when they discover a song and they go, hey, Dad, check this out. I mean, doesn't it bring you back to when you were their age in essence?
Well, yeah, my parents cut the plug off my record player when they heard Chris Kenner singing I Like It Like That. They said, okay, that's it.
When, that was a pretty fruity song too, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I asked my mom years later when I'd stopped doing the drugs and all that. I said, Mom, why didn't you want me to be in a band and why did you kick me out of the house? Or group, it wasn't a band.
Right.
And she said, I didn't want you to get anywhere near drugs or sex or women and all that. And I said, well, you know, how do you feel about it now? I'm a grandfather. I mean, I made it through, but I didn't tell you what I was doing on the way, you know. And I think really the whole thing about making it through to this point now is that I've still got a hunger for the music.
Right.
But I'm a mean tennis player.
That's what I've heard.
Actually, not very mean. Pussycat mean.
So what have you learned from your kids then?
My little one, who's 13, makes movies. He was looking for some dynamic soundtracks and he came up with some Hans Zimmer stuff. And he's been surrounded. When he was young, I used to talk to him in Arabic. I used to command him with very swift words, you know, to either get out of here or come here or do this or do that. And he used to respond without saying anything because he didn't know what to say. He just used to do it. So he's always had camel men somewhere. There's always been cards coming through the mail with guys down in the Sahara and all this sort of stuff. And he's always tutted and hummed about it. And for a while, he was into, what's that dreadful English group that sounds like... Sting.
It sounds like Sting.
Something play.
Coldplay.
Foreplay. So he had this thing going on at school about all this, and then one day he came home and he said, right, listen to this, and he played Rashid Taha. And I grabbed hold of him and I gave him such a big hug and I said, welcome.
How did he get turned onto this? Was it through like the Asian Dub Foundation?
It was a Hans Zimmer soundtrack.
Oh, it was that soundtrack you mentioned before. Yeah. I know you don't have much time. Do you have that? There's the cover of the CD. You want to give me a track to play off this that you do
play
know?
Track one, yeah. I know them all. This is good. It's good. It's called Teki Twai.
All right, it's FM 94.9. This is, say the name of the guy
Rashid
again?
Rashid Taha.
It's FM 94.9. All right, normally I don't cut off songs, but because Robert says I can cut off his song, I'll do that. I normally play him all the way to the end.
I thought it was Erasure.
You know, I read in the paper today that you had a sense of humor, and I thought, you know, I always knew you did, because the last time I actually had you on the phone when I was at a different station in town, I asked you about Jamaica, because what really upset me was when I was about 14 and Houses of the Holy came out, and all the DJs were going, "Hi, Dyer Maker, everybody, come on." Mm. And I was really upset, because to me it was very funny, you know, Jamaica, Alaska, you know, the whole nudge. And that was the only question I wanted to ask you last time. You're on your way down in a limo, and I said, just do me one favor. I'm going to put this on tape right now for all DJs in America to hear, but please pronounce the name of the Jamaican tinge song on House of the Holy. And you said?
Jamaica, yeah.
Just to make sure that people
My wife went on holiday this year. Did she go on her own? Yeah. Jamaica. Oh, that's right. Jamaica. No, she went on her own, yeah. Get rid of her. Goodbye, wife. Goodbye, cruel old wife.
But it's to me, that was a sense of humor that nobody really understood about Zeppelin. The fact that you would actually have...
But look at Hot Dog. I mean, even in Through the Outdoor, where we were more or less beached and marooned in our own time, Hot Dog was still very funny. She took my love, she took it all beneath a sign that said U-Haul and, you know, and all that.
Right, but
because the black music says somebody wants to get their ashes hauled.
Right.
That's a term, a sexual term, and I thought it was U-Haul. She was a Texan girl, U-Haul. So, I mean, there was all that stuff going on with Zeppelin all the time, the funny shit, but, it, you know, it's still there now.
That's the way it's supposed to be. Do your band members, are they afraid of you still?
I think that they think I'm some cantankerous guy up the corner still trying to touch it, you know. So going off, what's the matter with him now? He hasn't got it right yet. He wants more. That's what my mom used to say, much wants more.
Do you ever think you'll be able to give this up? Will there ever be a time that you will just sit back and go, I've got to relax now?
Because... Well, I can't relax. I read a book, you know, and I fake orgasms and all that stuff that goes on, you know, when you get... But, I mean, I really want to do this. Now, recently, Justin and I worked with Alison Krauss last December, and we did a tribute to Leadbelly, and she and I did this amazing duet of Black Girl.
Mm-hmm.
Black girl, don't lie to me. And it was like an angel joining my voice. It was, and then she played the fiddle, and it was so. You know, there's things to do there, but
You're still a fan, aren't you? I mean, you're really. You're still getting off on doing stuff with other people, and
I never did it though for years. See, in Zepp, we never broke away from the four people. I think Pagey may have played on a Stones track or whatever it was, but there was nothing else going on. And solo-wise, after we lost John, I really, I changed bands, but I felt like a man out of time. I was 32 years old, and it was all over. So really, it's taken me until maybe about 10 years ago before I've actually started working with, you know, Afro Celt Sound System or whoever it's been that I've worked with, and I've gone, wow. You know, because you think as a singer, and especially as I've got a style,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can't just go and hang out with, you know, I don't know who, you know, I have no idea who, but Queens of the Stone Age or whatever it is, and suddenly become a part of that, because that's not the place to go anyway.
Right.
You know, so a lot of mainstream rock is places where I've already been.
Who would you like to go do duets or... play on one track? I mean, obviously the Afro-Celt Sound System. Was it did guys like Peter Gabriel, when that happened, did he call you up and go, I've got this project, or did you see them in a club, or how do these...
No, they approached me because, you know, the more available you are and the more you work, like you were talking about the Hurdy-Gurdy and Nigel Eaton and stuff,
right.
And, you know, there's more stuff all the time that's going on because you're with a bunch of people who are always working and up in the ante and pushing it out. That's what Justin Adams and Johnny Baggett and Skin and, you know, everybody's all about. That's what we do. They push. They've got to push.
Which, by the way, I do have to bring this up because it was pretty shocking to me when you had Paul Thompson on the road with you, which I sat there the whole show watching Pagey up on stage doing his thing, and then I suddenly realized that he's not playing the really intricate, all the really, you know, heavy solos on like Song Remains the Same, et cetera, the really, you know the stuff I'm talking about. I mean, you did them. And I kept going, there's a guy, a bald guy who's in the back, who's behind keyboards, and he's wailing on the guitar, but nobody was actually kind of... And then you turned around and you said, we've brought a friend of ours with us who used to be in a band called The Cure, and his name's Paul Thompson. And I was like, that's the same guy that used to tell me when The Cure used to come on the radio with us years ago,
mm-hmm.
how much he loved Hendrix and Jimmy Page.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I thought, what... How did that happen?
Oh, that happened because of the Hurdy-Gurdy player, because Nigel had played with me on the Fate of Nations album with Richard Thompson mm-hmm. and Moira from Clannad. So I'd already started spreading it out. Nigel Kennedy was playing violin. You know, I mean, I was moving into new fields all the time, and Nigel was in a group for a while with Paul after he left The Cure. And when I started putting this together, I said to Charlie Jones, the bass player, I said, well, we need a guitarist who's Space Cake Man, and Paul was just loitering in Cornwall, educating his children on the side of a hill. And he said, okay, I'll come for a bit. But he did it for a while, and then, you know, he just didn't want to be away from home. So that's when the real loony arrived, and that's when Skin descended on us and brought us that most amazingly beautiful filigrees.
Right, and you actually did, you covered a Cure song, if I remember correctly. You did the... love song. I remember the spider song. I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah, I don't know what it's called.
I'm spacing on it right now,
but
which is pretty trippy. So your other contemporaries, the ones that were way after you, The Cure and so on and so forth, you were still paying attention even back then. So you were hip to The Cure. You were hip
kiss
to
me,
the,
kiss me, kiss me. Yeah. All that stuff's great.
The Damned, Pistols, and all that stuff.
Damned wrote really good pop songs. I mean, New Rose, Fan Club. You know, Neat, Neat, Neat. They're great songs. Unbelievable. You know, and. It takes a bass player from Brinsley Schwartz to put it all down in Rockview Studios.
I like that reference.
And it all works. It works. It's
so the
great.
So the new guys, the Radioheads, obviously you said Coldplay, you're not down with, but the Radioheads of the world?
Well, yeah. what about them? I mean, how many of them are there? How many Radioheads? I mean, they are quite so unique and occasionally spectacular. And the, you know, I think Tom's voice is absolutely amazing. So it can be so remote and fragile and pretty and frigid and out of all perspective. It's wonderful, yeah. Mm. It's really good. But, I mean, you know, it doesn't matter if it never is again, because it has been, and it's up to him what he does with it, same as me, you know.
Right. So Alison Krauss, who else in the grand scheme of things, if you got a chance to call up five guys, dead or alive, doesn't matter, who would you like to do recordings with?
I'd love to play with Hendrix. You know, I know that's because he's from the same era as I am, but mm-hmm. I did jam with him a couple of times when I was a kid in New York at Steve Paul's club, and it was just something so amazing. Buddy Rich, who's clipped aggression and absolutely just spectacular. I'd love to spend time again with Sandy Denny. You know, she was a really good friend of mine. And there are one or two jazz singers in Northern Europe. I don't know.
All right.
Yeah.
You know what I have to do? I should pull out the Battle of Evermore, if you wouldn't mind.
I don't mind, no.
I should play that, because that was that track that pretty much, you know, set everybody apart, because people couldn't figure it out for a long time, because I don't think anybody actually went and, wait a minute, there's somebody else singing on this. Mm-hmm. And she at the time was, I don't want to say relatively unknown, but they were...
Oh, that year, she and I were both voted top male and female singer in the United Kingdom.
But in this country, she never got the light of day, not as much as she should have, because as you know, this country is, you know, we don't have the BBC over here. We don't have the...
But you have got, there's radio changing now. I've met so many promoters and people along the way in the last 6 weeks who have just about, they've taken the money at one point and now they're fatigued with the major corporations linked to, you know, the fascists and all that sort of thing. It's all coming to an end. Slowly but surely people are bailing out. And you never know, you may get a bit more independence again.
Well, I'm hoping so, and the fact that you even swung by means a hell of a lot to me, and I want to thank you very much for doing that.
That's a great pleasure.
Thank you extremely mucho.
I'm really looking forward to the gig. I used to know a DJ down here. Actually, it was a girl, but I'll have to think about that. I can't find anybody from my era. Occasionally, I meet people.
I'm only 10 years younger than you.
Yeah, so yeah, but you weren't with me when it was all going absolutely bananas.
I was paying to see you play back in those days.
I found one agent in New York, Johnny Padel, who used to be around in the old days.
I know his name.
Yeah, and he went off the rails a bit, and I think Aerosmith, as they were saved as well, they saved him, and I've hooked up with him again. It's great to meet people who can remember it all, been through it, and they sort of say, hey, do you remember so-and-so? And you go, yeah, the Plastercasters, or, oh, yeah.
Yeah. So the Plastercasters was not a myth then? That really did happen?
I bought a DVD of theirs yesterday from Amoeba in San Francisco.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't know whether I'm going to show it to kids, but it's good fun.
When you go into a place like Amoeba, do people come up and go, are you Robert Plant? Do they do this to you? What is your standard line back to them?
So you look a lot like, and that's it. I've had that problem all my life. I'm such a smug bastard, really. But what are you going to say? Yes, here I am, and don't I look good, considering?
I'm going to play Another Tribe, the first track on the CD. Thank you, Robert Plant, for swinging in. Tonight the show is right behind the Convention Center at the Embarcadero. As I said to you before, I emailed Rosie from Rosie and the Originals because she's from here. I guess recorded the hit in San Marcos up the street, but she's from National City. Same place that Tom Waits is from. Isn't that bizarre, though?
Yeah.
Tom Waits and Rosie.
And Rosie, yeah.
From the same, drinking the same water.
Yeah, just coming out with different pictures.
I know, it's totally crazy. So, thanks again, okay. Robert Plant. This is Another Tribe from his new album. Go see him tonight behind the Convention Center at the Embarcadero. It's been a pleasure, sir. Thank you very much.
I've enjoyed it. Thanks.
It's FM 94.9.
You can't get better than that on a Thursday afternoon. That's that fantastic Robert Plant and the Strange Sensations. I'm going to introduce you now to our guest DJ that follows the Strange Sensations around to all the gay bars. From 94.5 The Edge in Dallas, I'm going to give you Alex Valentine, who's got something to say.
Well, Robert, at least I don't wear my leather pants everywhere I go, okay?
I can't wear leather anymore. I'm allergic to the dye.
Yeah. Does it leave marks on your skin? Does it leave the color on your skin?
It used to when I had skin.
You still wear men's pants, which is good.
Yeah, I have to. It's the weather. Sometimes you need to hold things.
He's shaking.
We're gonna.
He's shaking.
Alex Valentine has been traveling with us for 7 weeks. He's a DJ, but he works for a record company now. He's been getting us all these great gigs, talking to imaginative DJs, and now it's his turn to be.
Imaginative DJs? What? Explain. What
you
is
told
that?
Me these guys were really good.
They are really good.
Yeah.
This guy's pretty good. Halloran's good.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, we're going to hear Raquel Casbah from Rashid Tah.
That's great.
Can
okay.
we play that now?
Yeah, let's do that.
Did you have any other questions for me? Did you?
Which side do you dress?
He doesn't know that.
Left.
Okay, let's get to the sound check.
See you guys.
The radio station's FM 94.9. Many thanks again to Robert Plant for swinging by and actually hanging out on a radio station. Apparently the last time he actually did this kind of stuff was 1969, which is a little bit too long for a guy who's got enough musical knowledge to scare the bejesus out of anybody. But really, seriously, a pleasure. I have no idea how to thank the guy, but, you know, unbelievable.
Slam the door.